Welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast. Today, in episode number 55, I spoke with Ken McAlpine and John Palumbo, two of the three founders of the Blue Water International Grand Fondo, which is held in Lambton County and the city of Sarnia, which is about 50 miles from Detroit on the other side of the St. Clair River. Ken and John are not professional event promoters, nor are they longtime leaders in the cycling industry or ex-professional athletes. They are just regular people like you and me. People who love cycling and who wanted to encourage other people, cyclists or not, to come together to ride for fun and for community, and to go all in support of a worthy charity. I invited Ken and John to tell you about how they did it so that some of you would be encouraged to do the same in your own community, to continue spreading the joy of cycling across North America. And I also encourage you to ride with them and 1,500 of their friends in the beautiful city of Sarnia. I hope to see you there. All right, let's talk to Ken and John about the Blue Water International Grand Fondo. Ken McAlpine and John Palumbo, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thanks for having us on, Joe. It's a pleasure doing this with you.
Thank you very much, Joe. We're excited to be here.
Great. And that was Ken first and John second for anybody following along. I appreciate you guys taking some time to share with the audience here your story about your Blue Water International Grand Fondo, which also goes by the name of BIG, which is held in Lambton County in the city of Sarnia, which is about 50 miles from Detroit. People might know better, in my audience anyway, just across the St. Clair River. The goal today is to allow you guys to share your story, to tell others how you did it so that they might be encouraged to do the same thing in their own community, to continue spreading the joy of cycling across North America.
Well, thanks for having us here. We'd love to share our story with listeners. I think it's a great story about how we were able to, as a small community, bring together a cycling event that was welcoming for all ages and all participant levels, from the elite cyclist right to the 69-year-old grandmothers that haven't been on a bike in 20 years. So It was a bit of a challenge, but we were able to bring it together and in a few short years grow it to a very good size and very good ranking. So it's a lot of fun.
Fantastic.
I could just add a little bit to what John said there. We've been going for 5 years now. Our first year, we had 500 riders. And then we went to 700 riders, then 900, and then 1,000 riders.
Wow.
And then the fifth year was COVID affected, so we did a virtual event.
Okay.
This was a way, way beyond our highest expectations when we first started. It actually started when John and myself and the third member of our starting team, who unfortunately couldn't be here today, Kathy Johnson, we had gone for the ride, and then we had gone for the traditional coffee after ride. And during the coffee, we started talking about different rides that we had been at, different Grand Fondos we had participated in, both here and in Europe. And we thought, well, hell, why not just have our own ride here? We've got the beautiful Lake Huron. We've got rolling hills. We're in a great area. So basically, over the coffee, the three of us hatched the Blue Water International Grand Fondo. And we're very quickly able to come up with a name because we live in Blue Water country. Lake Huron's beautiful and blue. And international, as we're on the border between Canada and the U.S., and Grand Fondo just seemed a logical name, which means great big bike ride taken from Italy.
Right, yes. I've done many Grand Fondos, and lots of cyclists have there. It's super fun, but that's amazingly big. That, you know, I mean, you guys started big, and you've gotten bigger since. Well, that's wonderful. And of course, that's not a big shock to me, because that's why we set this up. I knew that you guys had done that and had done a really great job. I'd heard about it from a variety of people around the country, in fact, that confirmed that it was a really great, fun event. And then talking with you guys, I came to understand just how important it was to the cities and the communities involved. And so I thought, hey, you guys figured some things out. And if you could share that with other cyclists and other communities, why, we could have more of these wonderful events whether they're in Canada or in the United States. I wanted to provide some context to people, and you've already told us a little bit about the origin story, and maybe there's more to that. But then from a credibility point of view, then if you guys could, and we can take this a step at a time, you don't need to do it all in one breath, but we can just understand beyond the numbers of participants, what have the benefits been to the community, to the local governments, to the local businesses, to the residents, to, et cetera. And then we can get into, and this is where I'd like to spend the bulk of our time, on, well, how did you do it, really? I mean, is it some special event construction experience that you guys brought to bear, or were you just smart, motivated people who could plan well and organize, which is what I hope the answer is? And then you can tell us, you know, what we should do if we wanted to do something similar to what you guys have done. What do you guys think about that?
That works for me.
Sounds good to me. Do you you want to kick that off, Ken?
Okay, I can start. So do we start here with a question, Joel?
Yeah. So let's go back. You told us about the coffee shop, but tell us a little more. How did you actually decide to do it as opposed to deciding it was a good idea?
Yeah. After our coffee had finished, then we checked with a couple of other people who were fairly prominent in the writing community locally, and we got really good buy-in from them. So we proceeded to outline what the event would be. And one of the things we wanted to do was attach a charity to it that we're all very passionate about. And we decided on palliative care, which is something that we're all probably going to need sooner or later.
Yes.
And we also decided that because we believed in the cause, that this would be a totally 100% volunteer operation. All the money raised would go towards palliative care, and all the committee would not be paid. So this was allowing us to get buy-in by some people totally committed to the cause that were not motivated by the money.
Yeah.
And that allowed us to put a very strong committee together. And we were able then to organize with efficient people, get buy-in from some local sponsors, and then we're able to give great value to the riders, where we would give everybody that registered a free Giordana cycling jersey that was custom made from Italy. And they also were able to get food at the event free. And there was also a live band at the event. So we created this giveaway through the jersey. We created this party atmosphere after the event. And we made events, lengths that was suitable for just about all participants, where we ended up with a 30K event, a 50K event, 100K, and 150K. And to add to that, we bring in one or two celebrities each year. And over that time, we've had people like Frankie Andu, Hunter Allen, and we've had a semi-pro team from the Toronto area called Toronto Hustle, who would lead the charge of with the 150 ride and bring everybody together, keep everybody together for the first 100K or so. And then it was every man for themselves after that. A number of the Toronto Hustle people have gone on to with continental teams in Europe. And that whole atmosphere just was very, very well received.
Nice.
Yes. And, you know, Joe, if I was to have a conversation with somebody that was looking to create something like this for their community, you know, there was I'd give them some insight into the things that helped get us going. So like Ken said, you know, we met over a coffee. We had the idea that the community was ready for something like this because a lot of, you know, folks were going to other cities to participate. And we thought, why not do it here? So to get it off the ground in a short period of time, we're not special events coordinators by background. You know, we do have, you know, we're competent people at what we do. And we do know a few people, but it was more in the spirit of bringing together all the different elements. If you think about a hub in a wheel or a spokes in a wheel, and we're like the hub, we brought together the elements of a charity, the local charity that people were passionate about, like Ken said. We enlisted, so they bring their own supporters. We enlisted local service clubs to do the food. We got a local craft brewery on board to add that element. You know, we just pulled in different elements. And we also, I would take the approach, I guess it's like a grassroots type effort where for, we just went and talked to bicycle shops all over Ontario and southeastern Michigan because we sit on the border, and they were supportive. So we just went and talked to people.
So why was the something that the local area was ready for? Can you elaborate on that?
A number of the local bike shops had put rides together, but they were it wasn't overall totally coordinated between all the ridership. We reached out to the local bike shops. We reached out to the various clubs, organizations, and as we had no, we're not motivated by money that we're going to make ourselves, we had a more free-spirited approach to the to how we went after people. And I think it was leading by example. When people saw that we were doing a lot of work to get this off the ground, and we were doing it as a volunteer, and we were not making money, then other people started to jump in. Well, if you're not making money, that's fine with me. I'm going to come in and volunteer my time, which then spawns out, and other that one volunteer leads to a second volunteer. Whereas I think if we were taking out a significant amount of money each year, we'd not have got the same volunteer buy-in. And through this volunteering our time, since we first started, we have raised $240,000 for palliative care in our area, with the main focus being to further the palliative care education of frontline palliative care workers at this time. And that has led to one of our committee members, Dr. Madison, putting on a conference in our area and bringing in world-class palliative care speakers. And we have about 200 people now attending a separate annual event in our area, 100% funded by the Blue Water International Grand Fondo, with world-class palliative care speakers. And the amount of knowledge that is being transferred through these conferences is really incredible.
Awesome. I've heard now a couple of times you guys mention the importance of it being a nonprofit and that nobody was making money. And then that sort of opened up the floodgates to a lot of people saying, well, this is a good idea and I'd like to see it happen. And as long as nobody's making money off of my time that I'm donating, then I'm happy to do it. Is that sort of the idea?
Yes, I would say that's exactly how it unfolded a lot of the time. And we would approach people about it. And, you know, we presented sort of four key pillars to what we were trying to do here. And these are the things I would suggest to anybody looking to start one of these, who, by the way, we'd be very happy to help if they want to contact us.
Okay.
So we had the rough idea over coffee that it should be community health focused. Like, we want to get more people on bikes and get them healthier at all levels, not just the elite riders and those of us that are probably Grand Fondo special event riders, but, you know, people that just want to be more active, right?
Okay.
Charity, like you mentioned, came into play because people's it was a different conversation. It's an easy way to put it. When we came asking for support, it's for the better of the community. Everybody was willing to pitch in, and there was no concerns about costs. One of the two other pillars, I guess, that I think were really key was we started creating connection with participants and sponsors and everybody involved. And that something we should talk about too a little later is how our training rides evolved. And then the fourth thing was just fun. We had a lot of fun with this. Everything about it was meant to be fun and engaging, and the charity element just fit into that because people were giving. And I think most people are ready to do that if there's something clear cut and very presentable and tangible that they can make an impact on. So,
well, that's great. Yeah, I'd love to dive into those, hit them off, check them off one at a time here if we could.
Yeah, so the community health side, Ken experienced cyclists. I'd become into cycling probably about 4 or 5 years before that. That point, you know, I was in my early 40s. I had played a lot of rugby when I was younger, and of course, you get married with a couple kids, so you're not as active, and you just feel like you want to get back on a bike. Our other founding partner, Kathy, she was quite active runner and rider, so we all felt that there was a ton of value to give back with getting more people on bikes and having a little fun with it. So that, I think, is a key aspect to how we approached it. And we also knew, too, that if we were trying to just do a cycling event for elite athletes, it would be limited in how many people could engage that. But by having, if you think of it like a pyramid in the sense of the base of the pyramid, there's more people at the entry level, and it sort of works up through the top, that how could we create something where all these elements could be comprised? And that, I think, is a key part of it. Charity, we've covered a couple times. Connection.
Well, before we dive into the other pillars, let's stay on the community health. Did you get any feedback from anybody about whether you succeeded in getting more people riding bikes regularly, or as opposed to just at your event, you know, once a year?
Well, one of the key indicators, we have three bike shops in our local community. The three bike shops had the best years when the Grand Fondo started. And there was, I think at some point, there was maybe a 2-month delay in a backlog to get your bike fixed because there's so many people both bringing in bikes out of the basement that had cobwebs on it. They hadn't ridden the bike for 20 years. The tires were flat. Yeah. The tires were rotten. So they were bringing the bikes in there. And then new bike sales also blossomed. But one of the things that created that, that John just alluded to, was to get people used to riding in group environments. We created a thing that we called very simply Wednesday Night Rides. And Wednesday Night Rides was created on Wednesday because at that time I was riding with a group on a Tuesday and Thursday and had Wednesday night spare. So I asked a few of the local cyclists to come out and help as guides. We put a little Facebook post out saying, hey, if you want some help with your riding or get used to a group environment, a little coaching will help you. So we thought maybe 10 or 15 people would show up the first night, which we held at a local bike shop. When we got there, there was about 50 people. And it was one of these holy shit moments. What do we do now? But anyway, we got that, and then we became very structured with our Wednesday night rides. They became incredibly popular, and we give little talks on nutrition, on bike maintenance, on group riding, riding safely, rules of the road, etc. And that grew over a 4-year period to over 200 people coming up, and we had a sign-in program. So it forced us to we needed to hold an extra night because we were blocking roads with the amount of cyclists that were going down the road. So we had a Monday night ride then for novices. And we had about 50 novice riders come out, and then COVID shut us down last year. But these training rides were great for community involvement, for camaraderie. People would go for the typical beer and pizza afterwards. And then they would make arrangements to ride themselves with the friends they had met on these Wednesday night rides. They would ride on Saturday or Sunday with them. So all of a sudden, we're seeing more bikes on the local roads than we've ever seen before. Bike shops are busier than we've ever seen before. And it just created a wonderful cycling environment within our community. And people all bought into, hey, we're doing this. This is great for us, but it's also good for palliative care in our area. And we have one of the best hospices in Canada in our area.
It sounds like we did touch on the community health as well as the connection pillar. And then you mentioned then here at the end, the charity angle. And so I guess the answer is that being a nonprofit is important just so that people don't feel like they're being manipulated into making money for somebody and being willing to care about it and donate their own time for it. But there is money to be made. People are willing to pay more than just the what's necessary to cover the costs. And so why not benefit a legitimate charity with the extra money that people put in paying for their entry to the event, and maybe that also gave them access to these weekly community rides, or maybe that was open to everybody.
Yes. There's also a nexus of these things where charity and connection come in together. And here's a small insight. As Ken mentioned, we took the money from the funds raised, and it was Dr. Madison's idea, Glenn Madison, who is the medical director for the palliative community and the hospice in our area, in our whole district, that specifically the money was used for educating and training palliative care staff, so nurses, physicians, volunteers. And the money went to scholarships to send them to a world-class conference in Montreal, but it only went every other year. So then it became, how do we keep this going? So Dr. Madison and Ken and the rest of us, we came up with the idea to hold a conference of our own, which in the second year spawned a whole another set of charitable and connections generating out of it. And one of them I personally impacted by, because I've been the chair of our local hospital foundation. Yeah. So we neat connection charity nexus was that we expanded the conference to paramedics in our area. And the paramedics were starting to embrace training and a program where they do palliative outreach for hospitals. So it's a whole story in itself, but eventually by becoming part of our conference, some of the paramedics took it upon themselves to create a program with our local county that runs the ambulances and offer last final rides to palliative and hospice patients to see for a birthday or to see their farm one last time or something like that. And it's created a whole new level of giving and help and connection. So,
wow. Well, that sounds great. So the last pillar you mentioned was the fun pillar, and I kind of get what that means. I want to dive into that one a little more. I mean, obviously, the intention of the event was for the people who came to ride had fun, you know, whether it was the riding, the beautiful views, the being at a big event and having food and music, or all of the above. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the fun, you know, quote unquote, of putting on this event, because I'm guessing that there was some fun, but it had to be hard work. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt there was fun, camaraderie. When you initially talk about these things, hey, let's have a grand fondo. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a great idea. But usually these ideas have hatched after you've had three or four beers and they sound great. And then in the morning, you wonder, why the hell did I say that? But this was over coffee, so we're pretty sober when we're doing it. But once you get, as they say, the rubber hits the road, it did get real serious. But, it was fun because of the people we had. It's certainly not easy. And once you get down to the real minutiae, there's a tremendous amount of planning that goes into it. But it's a lot of it is common sense. And if you're prepared to work hard and you really believe in the cause, then it will happen. We have 12 people in our committee. We're a very efficient committee. We don't meet a lot, but it's smart people. And we divvy up the various tasks involved between the 12 people and trying to avoid overlapping. So there is a lot of laughing goes on, but we also have very serious times. And the Wednesday night rides were a lot of fun for both the committee to see the rewards of their labors with seeing so many people out in the road. And some of the people out there, they had never ridden more than 5K in their life. We would get them out and ride 10K, and they'd be emotionally just incredibly overjoyed, to be crying with joy, they'd be hugging us. And the end result of these training rides was so that they would ride the 50K route. And people were riding 50K that had no idea. So you got a tremendous amount of enjoyment through other people's enjoyment. And that was a fun that partly helped to keep you going.
Well, that's great. I think that this is a really good story. I hope that this resonates with a lot of people in the audience who are going to pursue this in their own town. I'm pretty sure that all of the events that I've ever done are for profit, and they make a lot of money, and I think that they also donate money. But it has always felt like a business, and that I was paying my money, and I, you know, could demand a quality service for my money. And that's a different feel than what you guys are describing, of how everybody is sort of in it together, and they're all trying to, they're going to get something out of it. They're going to have fun. They're going to meet people. They're going to maybe get in better shape. They're going to get back on their bike that they used to love and haven't done in years. And it's all for a good cause. There's no marketing BS or some fat cat running to the bank laughing the whole way. A part of it.
Well, you've hit on this secret sauce there a bit. Both Kenny and I are our business. I'm an investment advisor, and Ken has owned different companies. So we're not afraid to make money, but we realize that for it to be something different and valuable to a lot of people, it had to be fun, and that goes at all levels. So we had fun with the name. We always have plays on words. We even take it's even down to the detail of those Wednesday night rides. We set it up in such a way, we have volunteer guides that are experienced cyclists that could be out with we have it set up in five levels, and the guides could be riding at the top levels with everybody else, but they don't. They choose to focus on the folks trying to build and get there and connect, and we just get a ton of joy out of it, and that's a bit of our secret sauce. And even the atmosphere and the vibe, you know, make it welcoming, make it fun, make it a little different. And that's really come back, dividends like gangbusters, because it's spread. We have municipal government supporting us. We have county government supporting us. It's become a tourism thing. We're actually touching on areas now with economic development in our area and a whole wide range of things.
Yeah, let's dive into that if we could. I mean, the city, you're saying, so when did the cities get involved? They must have given you permit to be able to do it. But, you know, how has the city sort of gotten, the city, the county, whatever the municipal governments that you're talking about, how are they involved? Or are they just the beneficiaries of this and happy that you did it?
I'll let Ken kick that off. Ken, do you want to run with that, and then I'll finish off?
At first, the city was apprehensive. Nobody had ever done anything like this before, and we even had to start off explaining what is a grant fund or what does it mean. So there's a whole education process. But once we got the city through the first couple of years, we were paying permit fees. We have a city, and then we have a county. So we use the county roads a lot more. But the county came on board, and they would sweep the corners for us the day before the event, and they'd allow us to put signs up, etc. So everybody was very giving, and then the county started to sponsor us. And then the city has been more helpful with permit prices, etc. And then this is they're now at the point where they're really embracing it. And not to deviate, but there's another program that we've recently started called Slow Roll, which was fairly popular in a lot of U.S. cities. I think it originated out of Detroit. So we've approached the city fairly recently about having a slow roll on the Friday of the Grand Fondo weekend. And the city has really embraced that. Think it would be wonderful for the community. They've offered us free road closures, and they've offered us access to the staff to help promote it. And they're going to liaison with the local police force as far as making sure the road closures are safe, etc. So there's buy-in coming in. Each year, the city is buying in more and more.
Well, that makes sense. You know, I guess they're going to be conservative by nature, but the fact that you guys have shown them that you do a good job and people like it, and it's having benefits. You said tourism benefits even.
Yes.
It makes sense that they'd say, well, yeah, how we can make it better. But tell us a little more about this slow roll thing. I've not heard that word, before. No. I can imagine what it means, but you're saying that this would be somehow an add-on to your big event, the Grand Fondo.
Yeah, with the slow roll, what we're finding is people were coming on the Saturday afternoon to register. We have a dinner on the Saturday night that usually has about 250 people at. And speakers, like I mentioned before, we've had Hunter Allen speak, and we've had some of the Canadian national cycling team members speak. So it's become a very popular event. So people are coming with their family sometimes on the Saturday, but there's not a whole lot for the family to do. So we thought on the Friday night, if we did a slow roll, somebody comes into town with a family, they can participate in the slow roll. It's basically for anybody from 4 to 84, or can be 104. As long as you can ride a bike, it'll be slow. It's a party type atmosphere on your bike in a safe environment with guides. So to keep everybody, as it were, in line, we'll do about a 10K slow tour of the city with one stop to regroup. And then we'll come back to our start spot and we'll have a band there. And that's in addition to bands that we'll have every 2 or 3 miles on the route. Huh. And then at the end, there'll be food trucks and beer and refreshments available to all. And so it makes the whole weekend, if someone is coming from out of town or even people in town whose family might want to visit, they have something to do on the Friday, they have the Saturday night dinner, and then they have the Grand Fondo on the Sunday.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. So maybe what we ought to do is transition into this question of, well, how could somebody else do something like this? And part of that will be this idea that this thing will build over time. It's not a matter of plan 2 weeks in advance and two buddies could put this together and it'll be just like what you did with hardly any work. I mean, it'll build up layer upon layer over time. But let's start with this question. So you guys are experienced business people. You know, you didn't come to this with no organizational skills, but presumably other people have organizational skills and they're intelligent too, and they don't have experience in putting on big events or, you know, organizing bike races or have, you know, maybe have never even volunteered in putting a Grand Fondo on. Do you think people could build up over time something like what you guys have built if they just put their mind to it?
I think absolutely, without question, Joe, they could. You know, we talk as the two of the three founders at this moment, but we do have a 12-person committee, as Ken mentioned, and there's just a diverse amount of people there. I think if you started with some keen, positive people, whatever their background, you know, could be electrician, could be anybody, a teacher. We have many diverse people on our committee. We actually built our committee around people with the keen positive attitude and different backgrounds. And so everybody brings a little bit to the stone soup, you know, everybody brings an element. So I would say, just to your comments, if somebody was looking to do this, they certainly could reach out to us and we would help them. But in our learning, I would say, you know, take a 5-year viewpoint and start small and just start working with people that are keen and put the fun into it and learn a bit from what we've already figured out. And if you take that kind of a viewpoint, I don't think it would take long to build it, to be honest. And I don't think you need to be a business person. I just think you need to be open to listening. You have to create an atmosphere where people are encouraged and give some things a shot. Not everything works, but who cares? You're out there for fun. You're out there for everybody to be better off, and you're out there to help with the charity. So can't lose.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned twice the word positive as an attribute to people who that you guys, the attribute of yourselves, as well as the people you recruited to be on your committee. You want to talk a little bit more about what do you mean by that?
It's attitude and mindset. I think your podcast is a great example of all the different things you can learn from a variety of people who got experience. They've tried things and failed, but they never stopped trying, and they learned something. That's how you get to be an expert. We've had, you know, just the smiles on people's faces, the way we engage everything. We've had a couple committee members along the way that didn't really fit the positive atmosphere, and we felt that took away from things. So is that we didn't see that as a failure. We just saw it as something that we had to keep reminding ourselves that that's part of the recipe, the secret sauce Ken, do you want to build off that a little bit?
Yeah, I think when you're doing something for nothing, then you have to really believe in what it is you're doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're doing a normal job, you might not like it, but you keep going with not a positive attitude, but because you're getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're doing something for what you feel that you like and you feel it's for the greater good of the community, then the positive attitude is so important, or you can get down. And our committee is handpicked. They've got specific skill sets. We try and make it so that the skill sets don't overlap. And most of them are cyclists. Not everyone. That's not a prerequisite. But you just need to come with a positive attitude and add to what is being said. You know, constructive criticism is great, but there's a difference between constructive criticism and negativity.
Yeah.
So negativity is not welcome, but constructive criticism is.
Awesome. Well, that's what I was hoping for. Thank you for that. Now, you did also mention both of you that you recruited people with different skill sets, the stone soup idea. For somebody who's maybe thinking of doing it themselves, what sort of skill set should they be looking for to recruit to their team?
In our particular case, because it was palliative care related, we wanted to get the guy really that was in charge of palliative care in our area, who happened to be a very good friend and also a very keen cyclist. So his involvement was kind of a no-brainer. And then because there's quite a bit of money involved, we need an accountant. So we got an accountant that was a cyclist. We got somebody that was into a local health unit who was also a keen cyclist, but was tied in with organization promoting healthier living in the community. We got someone who was tied in with our local tourism office for promoting tourism. A couple of other people who were very well-recognized, well-known cyclists in the area. And we also needed a lawyer just because of the paperwork that's around. So we got a lawyer who was a cyclist. We had someone else because of the food involved that was very well recognized as a local foodie in our area. We got the two charities we support are Blue Water Health Foundation, which is part of the local hospital, and then St. Joseph's Hospice. We got a representative from each of them on our committee. And then there's also the three of us, John, Kathy, and myself. And that is really our committee.
Yeah. Well, that was tremendous. That was better than I'd hoped. That's really good clarity for people. And it helps me, and I think everybody, understand, well, how could you guys do this when you don't really know what you're doing? You know, well, you found people who knew what they were doing, at least, you know, for this part and that part, and all together. You made a team that knew what it was doing. So that's really great. And the fact that it was a nonprofit and a nonprofit that people could really get behind meant that you could recruit good people who could really help give you some of their time and their knowledge to make this thing happen. So that's really great.
And not to be negative, but we have been approached by quite a few people who have, because of our success, really want to be part of our committee. But if they don't have a quantifiable, tangible benefit, we don't need them. And some people we know are not that competent, but they want to be part of it because it's successful. So we've had to turn a few people down, and sometimes that's caused a little bit of grief. Hey, what's wrong with me? You know, you don't think I'm good enough or whatever. But there was no point duplicating things.
No, and it doesn't mean necessarily we couldn't find a place for people who are keen to help, because one of the things we made a mistake, I think, early on, it's a necessity. It's like if you start your own business from scratch or anything else, you tend to do all the jobs yourself. So as we built successful event after successful event, we started to understand more what we needed to do. We found places for people who are ready to help out. So somebody might not have been a committee member, but they might have been a nice person to run an aspect for us. So, you know, we just evaluated that as it came along and found, and some people will tell you, hey, I love what you're doing. Don't ask me to come to meetings. I just want a job. And that's good too. So you just find a role for them, and some people may not be a fit, but you know, anybody, I think, with a right attitude and a big heart ready to go, we can find something for them to do too. So,
well, that's great. It's interesting. It's sort of a way of bifurcating the experience where you've got this beginning part before it's successful and the people that will donate their time and expertise then versus the once you're successful, you now have a different set of problems. But still, it's all good. I think that that's great that you guys are looking to make this thing good for the community and good for people who want to help. And even if they can't help in the way they want to help, you have lots of ways people can help. And if they really want to help, you know, here's how we could use you.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's a constant process too of refocusing on what it means, at what level we're at, and how we want to get to places.
Fabulous.
One of the things, Joe, I don't know, it's kind of a funny part. I don't know if you would want to add it in later, but when we're talking about these Wednesday night rides, one of the things that really caught on, and I think I'd been to Italy and had been drinking coffee. So to get five groups, rather than call the different groups and different levels, 1 to 5, we called the groups coffee names. So on one end, you would have latte, which was, hey, we're going along the road at 15 kilometers an hour, la, 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 la type of thing. And then on the other end of the group was espresso. So espresso was a fast group. Hey, espresso, I'm going to go like hell here. So that caught on with the five different coffee names. So people would say, yeah, I'm moving from cappuccino to black or something like that today, or white coffee, or whatever the names were we had. But the coffee names were very good for people. It gave them a different meaning from 1 to 5.
So good in that they didn't have to feel like I'm a slow person.
Yeah. So it saved demarcation, it might be, with the coffee names as opposed to 1 to 5.
I think that's an important piece of engagement. That's another nuance, but we had the right mindset and we asked the right questions. If we looked at other attempts of other events that didn't work out so well, I found a common thread, at least from my perspective, is that they had the unfortunate tendency to narrowly focus on the elite rider.
Yeah.
We found a way to accommodate the elite rider and make the barrier to entry at all levels really low and easy and engaging.
What did you guys do for the elite rider? I mean, these guys don't ever like to do anything that's not timed, you know, or going to get a ranking at the end.
Well, to keep it safe, I've been, and I'm sure you have too, Joe, been on various rides and you're in the pack and you're coming to stop signs and, you know, by the fourth stop sign, you're looking, but you're not really looking because the guy says clear. So you go and you just...
Yes.
Hope that nothing else is coming there. And the other big thing has been you're going along, it's warm, you've run out of water, but you don't want to lose a group you're with. So you keep going, and it's just you're torn what to do. Do I stop? Do I not stop? I hope they stop at this water station. Oh, shit, no, they're not. So that's not good. So what we did was implement time sections. And with time sections, then that allowed different people, different levels to ride together, stop at stop signs, obey the rules of the road. And then for the 100K, as an example, we had three time sections, and they varied in length from 3K to 10K. So you come to a time section, if it was Joe, you and I riding together, you're faster than me, you would go like hell for the time section. I would go as fast as I could. At the end of the time section, you would slow down, wait for me, and we'd ride happily together. When we came to a fuel stop, a food stop, we'd pull in there, we could refuel, fill our water bottles, carry on. And it was all much more calmer, safer, and more enjoyable. So we kept the times for these time sections. And of course, the more elite riders would be faster. And it became a lot of fun tactically. Who's going to lead out? Who's going to stay? Who's going to pass just at the end of the time section and win by about half a second? So we would do an accumulation of the times, obviously. And the lowest time for the time sections won the awards. And we did that for the 50K, 100K, and the 150K.
Well, good. Yeah, that's a pretty conventional way of doing it, and it's very smart.
Yeah.
I have participated in events like that, that where they took the downhill or the traffic out of the timed section so that it would be – people would back more safely.
Yeah, and it's still competitive. Your competitive juices still flow. And then, you know, depending on the group you're with, depending on how slow they went in between, like some people still went pretty damn hard between the time sections, but that's up to them, whatever they want to do.
Right, exactly.
But we eliminated an overall time intentionally, although we're asked for it often, because that as soon as you give an overall time, that encourages people to go through stop signs, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're totally right to do that. And I'm speaking just for myself as a rider. I want the rules to allow me to be safe. I don't want to be encouraged to take chances just so that I can compete.
Yeah.
And not have to explain why my time wasn't that good because I actually was careful and I followed the laws and, yeah, and things like that.
Totally.
So that's really good. Well, guys, so we've gotten through what I had hoped for and actually more. So this has been fantastic. Is there anything else that you think is really important for people to know? And then we'll just get some contact info from you on how people can find your event and find your organization to ask questions.
I think you've got it well covered, Joe, as far as I'm concerned, unless John has something to add.
I think just to sum it up, you know, if it's an idea that's been on your mind, like it was on ours, here's a good example of how you just have to be willing to try it. We can certainly help with lessons learned. Well, heck, we might even come to your town and ride a bike with you and talk all about it and have you to ours. So, and Joe, you've got an open invitation to our event. It's every holiday weekend and first weekend in August in Canada anyways, and we're just over the border.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. We'd be honored. You might even appear in our next documentary, because that's something people don't know either, is that, and I think you got to see it, was we created a documentary, and the purpose of that documentary is to be used, you know, across, we thought Canada, but I think maybe we should be thinking all North America of, or anywhere really, of tells partly our story of how we got the event started, but, and partly the benefits to the palliative care community locally. You know, our spirit with that is to use it as a template to share with people. And so they can just, you know, if you think you're just crazy enough to try it and it sounds like a fun idea, it really is. And you are, and just reach out to us and we'll help you.
Well, that's great. And that documentary was put together very well. That was not an amateur project. It was very well done. And if I can include a link in the show notes, I definitely will.
Yeah, for sure. It's on our YouTube channel.
Fantastic. Okay. So in terms of the email address that for your event is info@bigf.ca.
Correct.
Is that also the website that people would go to?
BIGF.ca.
Awesome. And I'll put those links into the show notes so people who didn't take notes here will be able to find that
very
easily.
And I'll send you, I've got a little overview here and it's got the YouTube channel at the bottom of it. I'll send you that as well.
Fantastic. All right, guys. This was great.
Okay,
thank you very much for your time.
I hope it works for you, Joe. A lot of editing there might be needed.
I don't think so. You guys are naturals.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much, Joe, for taking the time. And hopefully we can help some people with this. And I've learned a lot and we appreciate it.
Okay.
Awesome.
Good.
Thanks
okay,
again,
Joe.
Guys.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening into my discussion with Ken McAlpine and John Palumbo of the Blue Water International Grand Fondo. I hope you'll be motivated to create a fun event in your own city. And if you'd like to know more about Blue Water International Grand Fondo or get some additional advice from Ken and John, be sure to check out the show notes at wiseathletes.com. While you're there, you can sign up to take a free fitnesses practices assessment, send us a question to address on the podcast, see all of our episodes, subscribe to our podcast, and you can sign up for our newsletter. If you are on social media and enjoyed this episode, please post about it. That'd be a great help. Thanks again.